trying to find that beautiful tone that inspires you to play. It's not about thinking about the gear, it's just about finding ways to free yourself.
Welcome to the Acoustic Guitar Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Grizzle, and in this episode, I'm excited to share a wide-ranging conversation with Eric Johnson and Gretchen Menn. We talk about ego, joy, how to get good tone, and, of course, guitars and gear. Before we get into it, I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor for this episode. Thanks to Tonewood Amp for sponsoring this episode. Tonewood Amp is a game-changing multi-effects device that attaches to any acoustic guitar. Get reverb, delay, and more. No amp required. Here are some user reviews. This thing is fantastic. I cannot put my classical guitar down since I received my Tonewood Amp. Playing my guitar without the unit on it now sounds stale. Turn on the unit and wow, it sounds like heaven on earth. Learn more at tonewoodamp.com. While both my guests are lauded for their electric guitar chops, this episode is all about playing acoustic. Gretchen Menn is a guitarist and composer based in the San Francisco Bay Area. She writes, records, and performs original music and is the author of the popular instructional book, The Way Music Works. She's also the guitarist in Led Zeppelin tribute band Zeppelin. Eric Johnson is among the pantheon of Texas electric guitar masters and might be best known for his Grammy Award-winning rock instrumental Cliffs of Dover. He's also an accomplished acoustic player with a signature Martin and several acclaimed acoustic-centric albums under his belt. And something that I took away from our conversation is that we're always growing. No matter what achievements or success may come our way, there's always more to learn. And we kick things off here with Eric Johnson sharing the guitar technique he's currently learning and practicing.
When I write songs, I try to incorporate new ways of playing, you know, and I'm trying to just get better at the finger picking thing. I really wanted to use finger picks, especially a thumb pick, but I just can't. I've spent too long playing like a flat pick, you know. So, when I either have to play with a flat pick to do that the finger picking thing, or just use my fingers, you know. So I've been, I love to play with a thumb pick, but I don't know if it'll ever happen. It just feels so foreign to me. But I've been working on just, you know, finger picking and stuff. And keeping a rhythm, you know, like just learning to, you know, that kind of thing, you know, which is all sorts of stuff you can do. And just keep it kind of going. And it was hard for me to learn how to do that. And I'm still just kind of a beginner at it compared to a lot of people, you know, but it's fun. It's fun to, you know, work on.
Wow. I love that keeping it humble attitude. That's cool.
Well, you know, it's interesting, you know, you can live in your own bubble and entertain yourself, you know, but I don't know. There's a point where that just kind of exhausts itself, you know, and you know, all of a sudden you look behind the curtains, like, and just see, wow, you know, it's kind of an illusion to kind of live in that, you know. And so at some point, I think if you're lucky, I guess that bubble gets burst, you know. It might not be the most comfortable thing in the world, but it's very medicinal and therapeutic, you know.
How did you come to that? Is that through, how does one have those revelations?
I think you just go out and you hear a lot of players, you know. You hear players that you can name players constantly that do any style of any selection of a style of music that, you know, I don't want to say better than you, because that's putting it back in that box, but maybe you just more realized or whatever, I don't know. But you know, I think and it's just that way with any players. Like you mentioned Django, you know, you're just like, wow, it's, you know, you, I can do some of his licks, but I'll never be able to liquid way, just alphabetically speak that way, you know, like, and that was what he did, you know, with Stephen Grappelli. Yeah. They'd be playing the Hot Club of France. It was just like liquid alphabet, right? And yeah. I don't, there's certain styles that I'm learning to be able to speak that way, but some of it's where you just kind of, you get little snippets of it, whereas some people, that's just their alphabet, you know, and I think realizing that, and like listening to Doyle and his finger picking stuff is just off the hook, you know. And I'm like thinking, well, you know, I mean, just kind of walk away and be humble about it. Like, well, you know, I got my own thing. I play electric and I write songs and do my thing. And you don't want to tear yourself down, you know. You want to support yourself and be a friend of yourself. But I think also you just go, wow, you know, there's room for everybody, and you're never gonna have the corner on the market, you know. Like that, and I don't know. It was a process. I guess I'm taking a long time to answer your question, but it's a process of a realization, you know. Mm. For me, it was.
Yeah.
I'm still working on it, and it's interesting because I think it's an antithesis to music. You know, we start off playing when we're kids, and it's just pure joy, and it's pure innocent exploration. And then we start, maybe we get decent enough to where we play in a band, or we get gigs, or we get whatever, and, you know, more gigs and tours and record labels, and we start building this this encasement of what we think we are. And then we get eluded into that, you know, that thing that's not really that real, you know. And then we have to kind of, I think at some point we break it down and realize, wow, it's just about the joy of music, you know. And the other stuff is kind of an antithesis if we buy into it, you know.
That really makes sense. I think sometimes I feel like there's something that's really creatively unhealthy about having ourselves reflected back to us too much.
Yeah, that's really well said.
It's this invitation for constant ego, but both in the positive and negative. And, yeah. You know, people giving voice to your greatest insecurities, and then people telling you things that feed something, you know, that none of us want to have out of control.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm still trying to figure that out. How do you go on stage and just completely play or record or whatever, or just sit in your, just play from that heart space that doesn't allow all that other influence. Yeah.
Have
you figured that out?
No, I haven't. And even if you're at the realization that, you know, I don't have all the answers, or I don't want clemency or a hall pass in life because I know a few licks on guitar. You know, that's you know, you get to the point where you go, wow, you know, I don't want to do that anymore. You know what I mean? It's like you just, it's kind of, if you kind of have to, then you don't, I don't know if you have that many, your choices get more limited to return to that, just that plan for fun. But it's a struggle, I think, because, and it's kind of natural, you know. You walk on stage, oh, is everything going right? Are people enjoying this? Is the sound just right? Am I playing good? You know, there's all this luggage that you accrue after you do it long enough, you know. Mm. And I think they're really, and there are people that can just like lose themselves, you know, and or forget about themselves and just be a conduit, you know, in a more, in the highest percentage of way possible, you know.
Do you think that the constant pressing yourself, which I know you do, and it shows in all of your music that you're always kind of pushing into new territory, do you think that flies in the face of kind of just being able to rest in and enjoy what comes most naturally?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Yeah, I do, especially if it's not really balanced. And I think I have times where it's not as balanced as it should be, just pushing. And it kind of, it creates a portion of yourself that you're a little too hard on yourself. And then you can just be kind of not as good a friend to yourself as you should always be. So, yeah, that's really, it's almost like a intersection in the road that I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. You know, you got to push yourself because, you know, your job is to go out there and really make people, you know, wow, okay, this is good, you know. But you're talking about an interesting question of ultimately how do you negotiate that intersection? Mm-hmm. That's really, really, I don't know. I'm not sure.
I don't want to believe, I don't think they must be mutually exclusive, because it's like, I can't imagine being like resting on laurels of any sort. I mean, and clearly you don't, all my heroes are constantly growing and evolving. And yet it's like, man, how do you, you know, when we see people who have picked, you know, a lane and really owned it in a beautiful and pure way, I do sense that there's this comfort and this joy that I find that I get little glimmerings of, but that I wish I had more of too.
Yeah, I guess it's just, I think maybe not getting too cerebrally obsessed with music, you know, and just keeping it on a, you know, a heart level, you know, that emotional level, you know, or at least respecting that and trying to inspire that. Yeah. I can't tell you how up it is for me right now. It's like, because you want it to be important, but you realize it's not that important, you know, if that makes sense, you know. So you want to really turn people on and raise their energy, or make them feel good, or put a smile on their face, and but you want to leave it at that, you know. You don't want it. There's certain muscles you don't want to strengthen, you know. Mm-hmm. Certain ones you do.
But, I mean, I think you really said something that I think is beautiful, and at least this is my thought currently on the matter, is that you want something to be important, and yet you also recognize it's not too important. It's like, but on one hand, I can say your music has been transformational to me. Like, you're why I picked up a guitar. My life changed because, like, I saw, at least what I felt in the moment was that joy, you know, in hearing you play, that made me think, how does one get like that? Like, is he the happiest person in the world, like, playing like that? Or is he so happy because he can play like that? Whatever it is, I think I need to take guitar lessons. And so while on one hand, it's like, we don't want to get all, we know that maybe ego doesn't help creativity. On the other hand, what I think is so beautiful about music is you don't really harm anybody. Like, the worst, so on one hand, it can have great meaning for somebody else and change their lives for the better, but you're really not going to hurt anybody either. It's like, people listen to music mostly voluntarily, you know, and you can always walk out of that grocery store or that gym or something, or put in earplugs if it really bums you out. But if you think of the ratio of potential positives to potential negatives, I don't really know anything else that has such a potentially high value for minimal risk.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, does this have any effect on composition for you? When you're writing music, do you think about these big kind of questions?
Yeah, I guess I always do. I try. There's a tremendous pressure I put on myself anytime I'm writing to not repeat myself and not to fall into some sort of formula, which I enjoy. It's part of, like, we were talking about the process of constantly pushing. It means that I'm very slow to put out albums. In fact, I was looking kind of more carefully, Eric, at your discography, of like looking at all of the timelines of stuff. And I remember back in the day, there was all of this, like, Avia Musicom was so huge, and when is Venus Isle coming out? And then I looked, I'm like, it's only 6 years. Like, are you kidding me? Like, that's nothing. Like really, like, I'm like, oh my gosh. If, like,
I was like, that was quite a crazy deal, but...
But it's not that long. Like as a fan, you're like, hey, can I have another album like, you know, yesterday? And then you realize as an artist, you're like, you know, if you want to make good music, if you want to make something that you feel measures up to your own standards and is worth people giving their most valuable asset, which is time. You know, if they're going to give you their time and attention, you don't want to take that lightly. There's a huge responsibility there. And so when I'm composing, I absolutely think about that. And now it seems like having been, you know, the fan that was eagerly wanting Venus Isle to come out. And now I'm like, oh, 6 years is nothing for an album that good.
It's interesting. There's a certain balance there, I guess, of, you know, you can get so like, oh, you know, and you're looking at the microscope and molecules and take 20 years, you know, or you can kind of like keep some kind of beacon on where you're achieving what you want, but not going too far.
Yeah.
And that was quite a lesson. I mean, I recorded the whole record twice, and it's like a whole thing, you know, I don't know what. But there are some songs on there that I actually listened to it recently and liked some of the stuff on it. It was cool.
Eric, can I ask you about one of the pieces that I was listening to and really interested in? Is, I don't know if I'm saying it right. Is it Serenidad?
Oh, wow. Serenidad. Yeah, that was just an improv, actually.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I've listened to so much of your stuff, and I was kind of shocked because when I was listening to it, I'm like, wow, like, I feel like you're just, maybe it's that constantly pushing into new territory. If somebody played that for me, it's like this new aspect of your creative voice.
Wow, thanks. I think that's because there wasn't any time for me to get in the way. I just really just figured I wanted a little touch of a nylon string guitar on that record. So I just, like, we just pressed record, and I just kind of, I think I went through like two or three times, and maybe I had a couple of little vague ideas, but just kind of went for just making it up. And then I think at some point I played the songs maybe twice as long as it is, and so I edited out a couple of sections where I didn't like them.
It's just beautiful. I mean, I have heard so much of your steel string stuff, but the nylon string was absolutely gorgeous. You don't use nails, right?
No, I don't.
How do you get the most out of a piece on acoustic guitar?
You just, when you think the song is working, when it completes the story that you're trying to tell, and you just kind of have to make a judgment call, creative judgment call on if it's doing that or not. Mm-hmm. Just kind of listen to it. Don't just entertain it in your head, but kind of listen to it and see if it's really accomplishing, you know, getting to that end point or where you feel it's telling the story that you want to tell. And sometimes that can be like an incredibly simple little thing. And notably, in some of those cases, you can mess it up by trying to make it too complicated. So you kind of have to just, you know, listen to the story you're telling and just what works, what's too much, what's not enough, you know?
Okay, on a purely kind of technical level, the tone has to be there. There's nothing to hide behind. So really drawing from the instrument the sounds you imagine in your head, I think is really important. And I think it's why touching bass a lot with your heroes helps you not start kind of apologizing or having bad tone become just sort of this like wallpaper that you just start to accept in your playing, but really listening carefully and making sure that each note is exactly how you want it to sound. And sometimes that means working in tiny sections, very slowly, and being solution oriented, you know, recognizing like, why does this note sound so crappy if I play it on the G string? And then possibly having to come up with a creative new fingering to, you know, so that the melody line maybe you're after isn't getting broken by suddenly this huge tonal discrepancy that happens between strings. Like violin, cello, viola players are very aware, and anybody who's writing for them are very aware about the tonal differences of notes produced on different strings. And as guitar players, I think anybody who's played long enough is inherently aware of it, but I don't hear people talk about it quite so much. So sometimes coming up with creative fingerings. And then maybe the last thing I'd say is in this day where it sometimes is so efficient to work to a grid in Pro Tools or Logic or whatever, tempo dynamics is something that I think a lot of people who have their roots more in rock today, you know, not in like the Led Zeppelin style, like let's just play to Bonham and we go, but metronomic is not a good thing, I think, especially if you're talking about something as intimate as something you're playing on a solo instrument. And so being able to have enough facility with whatever you're playing to really make sure that you're able to have that objectivity in the moment to recognize not just, oh, this is what I'm able to do, but like, no, right here it wants this little push forward, or right here it wants this little easing up. And so being able to have, you know, the technical stuff down enough so that you can have that objectivity and be a listener at the same time as a player.
So what do you think goes into getting good tone? Is it a gear thing? Is it like the instrument you're playing, or maybe how you're playing, like your technique?
You know, there are many different components of tone. I believe that tone really comes from yourself and your ears, and your gear and your instrument just determines how easy it is to get the sounds you imagine in your head. Eric is going to sound like Eric if you hand him something way less cool than all of his old Strats and stuff. He's still going to sound like Eric. Jeff Beck is still going to sound like Jeff Beck. Tommy Emmanuel is still going to sound like Tommy Emmanuel. I think it's a question of how hard do you have to fight for it. So to your point, certain aspects of, you know, playing acoustic guitar on stage, there are a lot of things that, at least for me, I don't travel with a sound guy or anything, are kind of out of my control. I'll often do things, it's not a fun answer, but it's a practical one. If I'm playing like Led Zeppelin stuff and all the different tunings, I'll decide which guitar sounds best in which of Jimmy Page's tunings, and then which one I should play based on kind of a practical, like how quick can I change over between the songs? So because I don't have a guitar tech, so everybody's not waiting there watching me tune. I know that Eric will give you a cooler answer. Mine's very practical.
I think that's totally right. It really is your intention and your fingering, how the resolution of how you fret the string as well as pluck the string or pick the string. And then also, it's really interesting what Gretchen's saying about the different strings, because that's huge. And yeah, and classical players might do that. You don't hear a lot of people talk about that on guitar, but it is huge. And when you're creating a storyboard of the orchestrated part, it really makes a difference, because one of them will be louder than the other or thicker than the other, and that's a big thing, you know. It's the resolution of how you and fretting the note makes a difference, how you fret it with your finger. So I think it's a process of trial and error where you learn the sweet spot of the fretting, the sweet spot of the picking or plucking. But behind that all is really the intention and then the strings you choose to play it on.
So here I was expecting, here's what kind of amp you use, here's the pickups you need, and it's just how you play the instrument is the most influential piece of getting tone.
I think really it is, you know, and because people do, like Gretchen was saying, they sound like themselves no matter what they use. You know, it might be a little bit more realized on certain gear, but it's really comes from that initial performed intention.
Well, I did want to get into gear a little bit. Eric, you have a signature model. Is it a Martin that you have a signature model of? Yeah. And you have a D45 that I've read is very special to you. I want to talk about both those guitars if we can. What makes that D45 so special to you?
Oh, well, When I was like 28 years old, I got almost all my guitars stolen. I had a solo acoustic guitar opening for somebody at the Opera House in Austin coming up in a few weeks. But my dad bought me that guitar, because I got a lot of my guitars stolen. And one of which got stolen was a Martin D41. I had a D41 that was not there. And then, I had my own D41. I had a friend of mine's D41 that got stolen. So I had to give him my D41 because his got stolen, just to make up for that. But then I didn't have an acoustic guitar, but my dad bought me that guitar. And so it's very sentimental to me.
And how about your signature guitar? When did that come about, and what went into it, and what makes it your signature?
Well, Dick Boak at Martin, I don't know if he works there anymore, but he helped design that guitar for me. And that's a crazy thing, designing an acoustic guitar. I think I probably could have done a better job just maybe now, or maybe just trying some different things other people would suggest, because I think I kind of went for what I thought would work. I mean, it's a cool guitar, but I just didn't really know a lot about acoustic guitars when I designed it. I was thinking more about looks and stuff, and I really didn't know. You know,
what would you do differently now?
Oh, I think I'd do an OM style, maybe with a cutaway, but maybe try different woods. Just kind of make sure that it had the right sound through all the notes. You know.
Yeah.
Gretchen, what acoustics do you find yourself reaching for the most when you reach out? This one, is there one that's just kind of finds its way into your hands more often than not?
It kind of depends on what kind of acoustic playing I'm doing. Right now, I'm very lucky to have Kenny Hill's personal classical guitar that he just kind of let me.
That's awesome.
It was nuts. I mean, I had a Kenny Hill guitar, that was, I always said, way more guitar than I am player, but I knew it was kind of a local guy, and I was playing a gig actually with Zeparella, and there was this guy who showed up at the merch table, and he was like, "Do you play classical guitar? You know, your left hand looks like you do." And I was like, "Oh yeah, I have this amazing instrument. I should play more." You know, my typical like, "Oh, I wish I had more time. You know, I'm not that good." You know, and I mean, he's like, "Oh, I'm a builder from around here," and I'm like, "Wait. We're in Felton, California." I'm like, "What's your name?" And he's like, "Kenny Hill." And I practically like jumped over the merch table. I'm like, "Oh my God," you know? And anyway, so he's a composer. We've become friends. I used his guitar on my second album. And then after that, he liked the album, and he was like, "Take," you know, he'd built himself a second personal guitar. And he's like, "Take this first one, see what you do with it. It's got True Temperament frets." Eric, have you ever played True Temperament frets?
No, I haven't. Does that mean they're sideways?
No, they're not fanned. They've got these little like corrections.
Oh, they look like squiggles.
I don't understand the physics of it. I have all sorts of questions about, like, you know, the little bit that I understand about temperament. I'm like, I'm not sure why it works, but it does sound beautiful. And if Kenny Hill's a big fan, then
I'd love to try one of those.
Next time we're in the same town, you have to play this guitar. It's nylon string. It is so gloriously beautiful.
Oh.
I'm every time I see him, I'm like, "Do you need your guitar back?" And so far he hasn't asked for it back. Yeah. So that's one that's just incredibly special. My time with it, I will cherish, but I don't deserve to have it. I have a Stephen Strom Eros, which he's also an incredible builder. That was the one that I did for the minor swing. Very non-traditional gypsy jazz rendition, but I learned it and I wanted to do it. And then recently I've been doing a lot of stuff with Breedlove guitars, which I love because for, you know, Kenny Hill stuff, Stephen Strom, these are all instruments I couldn't afford if I were not like a professional musician working, you know, in collaboration with companies. And I always feel like there's something kind of irresponsible if you're doing any teaching, to not have some affiliation with a company that makes quality products at a reachable price. You know, you don't want to be like, oh, what guitar do you recommend? Oh, I recommend this $9,000 instrument. It's like, who can afford that? I mean, not saying they're not worth every penny of it. The stuff that goes into these high-end guitars is huge. But Breedlove makes really great stuff. It's sustainably harvested woods. They're a nice combination of kind of traditional looking, but also with like a lot of beautiful colors. And they're just the nicest people. So I've been really enjoying that. And I'm not afraid to take them on stage with me. I think I'd be really nervous to bring, you know, to subject anything super nice, or I shouldn't say super nice, everything's super nice, super one of a kind to the rigors of the road. So
What guitars do you bring on tour, Gretchen? Do you bring the Breedlove on tour with you?
That's what I've been using on stage with Zeppelin, yes.
Mm-hmm. I use Maytone guitars on stage.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Tommy Emmanuel's.
Yeah, and that's where I learned about him first, from playing his and talking to him about it. And they have a great pickup system with a built-in mic, and it's really... It's tough getting a good acoustic sound live, you know. So I think the Maytons have a pretty great pickup system.
I mean, we talked a little bit about what projects you're working on right now. What's in your world creatively? Yeah, Eric.
Well, I just got off tour a couple weeks ago. We just finished a 7-week tour. I got a couple more gigs to do and doing an instructional video. And then I have a couple of more masterclass things to do in August. And then we go out for the second leg of this thing in late August through September.
Gretchen, how about you? What do you got cooking right now?
It's funny. Somebody asked me this the other day and I felt so scattered that I'm like, I don't know.
everything.
I'm doing lots of shows now with Zeppelin. So that's like a Led Zeppelin tribute thing that's super fun and great education. And I'm playing with my original trio. I was just telling Eric, I'm in school right now. I'm getting a degree in media composition. So my undergraduate degree is in, you know, music more general. This will be a master's in media composition. So like composing for like films, TV, games.
Wow. Have you done any scores that we should check out?
I've done assignments at this point, but you know, but it's fun. It's actually, it forces, having specifications and having a deadline forces you to work with the skills that you have at your immediate disposal. So you don't get the time to sit there and beat yourself up and be like, oh, I should work more on, you know, my counterpoint skills, or, you know, my harmonies are boring. How does Ravel do it? You know, is you have to work within what you can do right then. And it can be really rewarding. I mean, just like Eric was saying with Serenidad, is when you are improvising or when you're working on this tight timeline, you don't get to get in your own way the same amount. So it's kind of fun. And then I have something coming up next year that's really exciting. I don't know if you know Stephen Mackey. He's an incredible composer. He's an electric guitarist who's been incorporating electric guitar into a compositional context since like the 90s. He teaches at Princeton. He's done all sorts of cool stuff with like the Kronos Quartet and really cool things. He's writing a guitar concerto, and I guess I'm going to be performing it in Salt Lake City in almost exactly a year. So I have a year to freak out about this.
Very cool stuff. Oh, man. We're coming to the end. Thank you again so much for your time. And I wanted to leave it open if either of you had questions for each other.
Well, I want to hear this stuff that Gretchen's working on. I want to hear the concerto and stuff. That sounds wonderful. That's going to be great. Was that with orchestra, Gretchen?
Yeah, I guess it's going to start out. He's composing it now. It's going to start out on classical guitar. He already sent me some sketches for it. And then it's going to move to electric guitar. But he likes to do lots of wacky stuff with like prepared guitar and slide. He had me send like every video. He's like, show me every technique you can do.
Wow.
So I'm like, oh boy, okay. I'm not scared.
No, that's going to be great. I can't wait to hear that. Wow.
Well, I have a question for you, Eric, too. I'm curious. Like, I mean, I've read so many interviews of you, and you know, you get opportunities to talk a lot about your gear and everything like that. What do you love talking about music? Like, what do you wish you had more opportunities to put out there?
Oh, just the trying to find the trying to find that beautiful tone that inspires you to play, that's not really, it's not about thinking about the gear, it's just about kind of being, you know, finding ways to free yourself and see what possibilities come from that, you know, kind of being more receptive than proactive sometimes. And just discussing what are the things that make that happen, you know, and talking about all the little pieces that maybe inspire you to get more in that vortex.
Is there ever been any like great moments of breakthrough or great advice that like has really helped open something up for you?
Yeah, you know, people, I think a lot of people will say, hey, you know, some of my favorite stuff you do is the just the improv stuff that you don't have time to think about or put too many fingerprints on it. I've always kind of keep in the back of my head what I toured with B.B. King, and he told me, he said, you know, be yourself. Find that unique light that you shine that nobody else does. You know, because you can always, you always can find players that play great and ever, you know, there's thousands. And now with YouTube, I mean, there's no end to it. And to kind of find that unique pulse that you have that really, exemplifies you, that's unique.
When do you feel musically most kind of in connection with that part of you?
I think when I'm not thinking about it too much. I think when I'm not thinking. Isn't that interesting? I'm using the mind to not think. Right. There's right, the conundrum right there, you know?
Right.
Jeez. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not thinking about it, I think, and just letting it happen.
The Acoustic Guitar Podcast is brought to you by the team at Acoustic Guitar Magazine. I'm your host, Nick Grizzle. The Acoustic Guitar Podcast is directed and edited by Joey Lusterman. Tanya Gonzalez is our producer. Executive producers are Lizzie Lusterman and Stephanie Campos Del Broy. If you enjoy this podcast and want to support us, visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/acousticguitarplus or find the link in the show notes for this episode. As a supporter, you'll have access to exclusive bonus episodes along with other special perks. And if you're already a patron, thank you so much for your support.